The California of glossy dreams is the California of palm trees, reflected in Ray-Bans, tall, slender, glamorous, and heading right up into the sky. The California of the enlightened spirit is the California of majestic sequoias in the Sierras, sentinels older than history, icons of the environment. The real California, though, the California of immigrant dreams that break and get reborn, of lives as they turn out not as they are planned, is the California of the eucalyptus. In 1904, nearly 90 years before we played under an orange-glazed sky on the night of that fire, a man arrived in the town where I grew up, Nipomo, with a plan to make a fortune by improving the world. Theodore Lukens, twice mayor of Pasadena, travelled the 170 miles or 280 kilometres up the coast from Los Angeles County to see if a stretch of land not far from where our house later stood might be a suitable place to plant a lot of trees. Like his friend John Muir, Lukens believed that California desperately needed more forests. Since the mid-19th century, forests and their loss had been the principal focus of conservationist thought in America. According to Jared Farmer, who traces the history of the eucalyptus in California in Trees in Paradise, 2013, Lukens and Muir were particularly keen on growing forests as a way to provide water, always a key to power in the state. Trees brought rain and captured fog and moisture. Without forests, the men feared the state's great cities would dry up. The forests were diminishing because people were cutting them down at an ever-increasing rate, which still seemed unable to keep up with demand. America's aspiring middle class longed for wooden houses filled with wooden appliances and to travel in trains with wooden coaches that spared over thousands of miles of rails that rested on wooden ties. As a result, there were concerns about an impending hardwood famine that America was hitting what might be called today peak wood. In 1907, a widely circulated report by the Forest Service claimed that America could run out of hardwood in just 15 years. The solution was to grow more forests, and quickly. The eucalyptus came to be seen as the tree for the job. Evergreen hardwoods native to Australia, they were first brought back to Europe in the 1770s by Joseph Banks, the greatest British naturalist of the 18th century. In 1788, Charles-Louis Leretier du Brutel gave them their systematic Linnaean name, derived from the Greek roots eu for well and kalyptos for covered. The covering in question is not that which the tree's fallen leaves and seed pods provide to forest floors, but the discreet cap which conceals their flower buds. Since then, by some estimates, only 100 million acres, that's 40 million hectares, of eucalyptus trees have been planted around the world. You can find them in the hills above Lisbon, in massive plantations throughout China, and in the fields of India. But nowhere have they thrived more readily than in California. Nobody quite knows how they got to the state, or indeed whether it was a state when they arrived. Most accounts point to an arrival by ship from Australia sometime in the mid-19th century, when a traveller could get to San Francisco more quickly from Sydney than from New York. Horticulturalists prized them as an exotic novelty, beautiful additions to the gardens making the best of the young state's lovely climate. Medical professionals recommended their planting as a way of absorbing the noxious miasmas thought to cause malaria, an idea that may have been influenced by the tree's astringent smell. As well as these niche applications, the trees also had a broader claim on human attention, a facility that has always stood immigrants in good stead. They could thrive where others could not, and with minimal assistance. The Californian climate, not unlike that of the parts of Australia they came from, suited them well. They far outstripped the state's native species in productivity. A black oak, the eucalyptus boosters said, took 50 years to put on a foot in diameter, a white oak a century. A eucalyptus could do it in a decade. In Nipomo, Lukens thought he had found the perfect place to put this capacity to use. For thousands of years, winds off the Pacific had blown beach sand in Nipomo's direction, forming a flat-topped mesa of around 12,400 acres, which was home to scrawny oaks, scrub bush and little else, a desert waste of sand, as a local newspaper put it, that sold for extremely low prices. But Lucan's was taken by the mess of soils, deep if poor, and cold mists. He deemed it better for eucalyptus than any other spot in California, as long as the young saplings were offered some sort of windbreak. Rows of barley worked well. It could also be reached by the railroads. In 1909, Lucan's and two businessmen from Iowa put $150,000 into creating the Los Berros Forest Company and started planting 8,000 acres they had acquired at the north end of the mesa. It was both a timber business and a property venture. Land with trees was worth more than land without. In 1910, William Brintnell, who had served as the president of Drover's National Bank in Chicago for more than 30 years, paid over $20,000 for 687 acres on the Los Berros tract, which, at $30 an acre, was fetching as much as 10 times what had been paid for it 5 years earlier. "Eucalyptus promises to be great industry," announced the front page of the San Luis Obispo Daily Telegram. Later claiming that what the speculators following where Lucan's had led were planting will be the largest artificial forest in the world when completed. Land on the fringes of a tiny town that had once been called worthless now brought in what the newspaper called fancy prices. In 1912, the paper told the story of George Munger, an eastern eucalyptus man who rolled into town and spent nearly $50,000 on 200 acres. The area enjoyed some of the largest property transactions the country had seen in years. An advertisement in the Omaha Sunday Bee promised that the tree's timber would produce a value of up to $5,000 an acre, $130,000 in today's dollars, in just 10 years. Hopeful investors were welcome to a free 1,600-mile trip, no obligation, at least on paper, aboard a Pullman rail car from Omaha to California to scope out eucalyptus opportunities. Some companies promised forests grown while you wait, or even the absolute security and absolute certainty of investing in land speckled with eucalypts. It wasn't just greasy salesmen buying in. Jack London, who was to become one of America's first writers of world renown, studied endless pamphlets about the promise of eucalypts. "I know of no legitimate investment that will compare," he wrote. He cited his eucalyptus investments as a financial justification for an advance of a couple of $1,000s in a letter to his publisher. "I don't want to write short stories," he told him. His eucalypts were to afford him time to write meaningful novels instead of commercial bestsellers to get him out of debt, to change his life. "I remember standing in the shade of eucalyptus trees wishing life were different, too. In 1996, 1.15 million Americans got divorced, including my parents. A wave of hospital closures, 23 in California between 1995 and 2000, shuttered the one where my mum worked as a dietitian. We started getting free lunches at school. My mum sold her van and bought a used car. She brought home McDonald's hamburgers for dinner, 29 cents on Wednesdays. We moved into a house off a dirt street which led into the depths of the forest Lucan's had created. It was called Eucalyptus Road. I could see the trees across the vacant lot next door from my bedroom window. I could hear them creaking as I lay awake in bed. One afternoon, when I was about 9, looking out of the window, I decided things had to change, and that the first step was to find my grandmother, who had vanished after my parents' divorce. I looked up the number of her Baptist church in the phone book. The pastor's wife answered. I asked her, my Korean terrible, where my grandmother was. She held the line for a while, as if she were thinking what to do. Then she said she couldn't tell me anything about where my grandmother had gone. I crossed the vacant lot and walked into the forest. Eucalyptus trees are messy, especially blue gums, Eucalyptus globulus, the sort Lucan's planted in Napomo. They shed their bark like divas change clothes, dramatically, peeling back layers and switching colours for all to see. As they get old and massive, their branches and leaves twine like the columns of a Baroque cathedral. I waited under one until it got dark, ripping the leaves so they stained my hands as I prayed. I wish I could say that I prayed for my grandmother, but at that age I just prayed that I might move somewhere different. The blue gums I hid among were not meant to have grown that old. They had been planted for harvest, but the eucalyptus bubble burst in 1913 when the government's Forest Products Laboratory concluded that blue gum wood grown in California was worthless as timber. No matter how it was cut or cured, the wood warped, cracked and twisted. Staff at the American Consulate in Melbourne asked the Conservator of Forests for the state of Victoria what might be happening. They were told that however quickly they might put on girth, eucalypts needed decades to mature into the sort of wood that could be used for anything but pulp or mine props. Australia's lumber industry relied on old-growth forests, not green logs like those from California's young plantations. The news was devastating. The industry imploded. Lucans, almost alone, kept the faith, arguing that the bust had simply exposed honest dealers from shysters. But losing its job did not stop the eucalyptus. Ordered plantations turned into untended groves. Native species adapted to them. The monarch butterflies that find shelter in California each winter could cling more easily to their spear-shaped leaves than those of native trees. Many humans were less keen. The eucalyptus is a tree that positively relishes burning. California's native flora are quite capable of burning on their own, but adding trees that think they are candles hardly helps. In October 1991, a fire in eucalyptus-covered hills in the East Bay killed 25 people. That aside, today's conservationists tend to think that plants from elsewhere are always a bad idea. They want some areas cleansed of all trace of the eucalyptus. But most families that consider themselves Californian have spent less time in the state than the eucalypts. To the native-born Californian, a state without them is hard to imagine. The move to get rid of the trees as an invasive species has prompted a range of pro-eucalyptus demonstrations. As Chris Thomas, an ecologist, suggests in his book Inheritors of the Earth, 2017, the flourishing of the eucalyptus and its attendant butterflies in California goes some way to offset the dire prospects that some species of the genus could have faced in their ancestral home down under. We eventually found my grandmother. She had moved to a trailer park on the edge of a nearby town. Spear-shaped leaves and dried seed pods littered the asphalt outside her white trailer. It took her a few years to rebuild a relationship with my mother, but now they are closer than at any point in their lives. I don't think I will ever completely understand how my grandmother felt about what happened in Napomo or why she stayed away for so long. But I do know that sometimes the dreams that bring people across oceans and the lives they end up leading are very different, and that there are gains to be had amid disappointment.
Thanks for listening to Editor's Picks. To read or listen to the whole of our holiday double issue, go to economist.com/radio offer. Season's greetings from all of us at The Economist and best wishes for the new year. I'm Tom Standage, and in London, this is The Economist.
Capital One has a fresh take on banking. Now you can open a new savings account in about 5 minutes and earn 5 times the national average. Banking with Capital One means 5 times the savings towards your dream honeymoon, or 5 times the savings towards your family's ultimate vacation, even 5 times the savings towards just feeling good about saving. It's time to make your savings goals come true. This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, N.A. member FDIC.